Good morning, and welcome to another episode of Too Much Calling. I'm your host, C4. I'm Depressive Flaw, and we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking to what's important to us. Hopefully, we're important too. And to find more information, there are so many great ways to find more information.
Scrolling for August 22nd, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I am Chip Hessenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you, and maybe you can find more information. Did you like our intro from Sam? One of our biggest fans was sitting in the car, and his mom recorded him doing our intro.
That is awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
Oh, in fact, Sam's a cool little kid.
I love Sam.
What can we say?
Thank you, Sam. And all of our other young listeners, if you have something that you want to record and send it in. We'll probably put it on the show. That was special. Thanks, man.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You and I got a chance to see The Founder. This is the movie about Ray Kroc, the salesman who really brought us McDonald's.
Steve, was he the founder of McDonald's?
No, he is not the founder of McDonald's.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Are you positive?
After watching this movie, I am sure that this man, although he says he's the founder, he took this great idea from these other guys.
Well, he paid for it. They paid for it.
Yeah.
This is a fascinating story on building a business.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fascinating story of how long it could take a person to find the right idea.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a couple stories here. This is a Ray Kroc movie. So Ray Kroc, we consider the founder of McDonald's.
Right.
Now, being the founder is, he met a group of people from San Bernardino. And these brothers had created a way of creating hamburgers.
Not just creating the hamburgers, but getting the hamburgers to the customers in 30 seconds.
And in fact, that was the whole point.
Yeah.
It's a logistics. This is building a factory.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was a kid, I don't know, an itty-bitty kid, they always would take us over to a Krispy Kreme factory. And we got to see how the donuts were made. And it really is. It's fascinating for a kid. And at the end, of course, they give you a donut.
Yeah.
All right. Here in Chicago, we got other places that kind of work like factory. If you've been to a Portillo's,
mm-hmm.
they have a factory approach. In fact, that's a very modern way of doing it.
The assembly line, yeah.
Super Dogs. I mean, they have all these like crazy ways of creating the dance to be able to make your food.
Yeah.
Now, and that's what these brothers did down there. And because they were so efficient at doing that, this isn't Al's Diner from Happy Days.
Yeah.
There's no car hop. This is a place that you go and get in line,
mm-hmm.
and instead of having utensils and stuff like that, gave you paper.
Right.
They gave you paper so you could just throw it away.
Brilliant.
Well, at the time, it was revolutionary.
Absolutely.
Now, we want to do things a little differently today, but at the time, it was revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ray, being a salesman, knew there was potential on this and went out and, well, ultimately got an agreement with the brothers to be able to franchise this. And this is where the story really takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And you recognize that as much as these brothers created this process, this factory, Ray Kroc had quality control issues. And that was really that's the downfall of franchising,
mm-hmm.
is that Steve's franchise is a new one and it works just like it's supposed to work. It's always clean. They always serve things just the way that they put it all together. But Chip is a person who decided, no, it should have lettuce on it, or we're going to start making breakfast, or we're going to do any number of things.
Once again, the Mitch Hedberg comes into this, where Mitch Hedberg says, yeah, I want to be a stubborn McDonald's owner. The kid walks up, do you have cheeseburgers? Nope. We've got spaghetti and blankets.
Well, Ray recognized that was going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
Ray eventually found a different way of doing it. In fact, this may be the beginning of the modern restaurant. Because of that, he would find a couple. They would sign on, mm-hmm. to run their McDonald's.
That was an amazing twist in this story where Ray Kroc decided what he needed was a team, a couple of husband and wife sort of team that would be devoted to this concept.
And they recognize, the idea is to recognize that their job is to produce what McDonald's has put together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we get a taste of some changes that the brothers didn't like, the bringing out of the new milkshake
mm-hmm.
that was not made of ice cream, and it's a little different, but it lowered costs.
Right.
Now, many of our modern conveniences that you experience today, Steve,
mm-hmm.
from pre-cooked bacon to sausages that are, maybe they're already, you know, weighed out, certain size, they're pre-cooked, all you have to do is heat them up.
Yeah.
A lot of these all came from this. In fact, Dunkin' Donuts, they run their breakfast. I mean, the eggs are pre-cooked. All you have to do is heat them up with steam or whatever it is.
Right.
For good or bad. So we really did kind of, through their research, through their design, we're able to revolutionize food preparation, the process of running a restaurant, the process of running a franchise. Mm-hmm. This story is a story on recognize the value of consultants, because Ray was putting together McDonald's and they were selling, but he wasn't making any revenue
mm-hmm.
off of that. And they say, well, it was a bad contract or whatever it was. But really, it was a consultant, a guy who ended up becoming CEO, who showed them that they were going to be a real estate company. And they were going to, this is how they're going to enforce their standards.
He did some very brilliant things. There's no doubt that Ray Kroc gets a lot of credit for this. But the entrepreneurial spirit of the McDonald's brothers is featured in this movie really well, where they decided that they had something special. They worked really hard and they were just fine with where they were. Ray Kroc came in and said, here's what we could do with your brilliant idea.
And I think that the brothers became, they truly are the scientists.
Mm-hmm.
And they created the, like I said, the factory. They designed this. This is part of human ingenuity.
Mm-hmm.
And you recognize that the designer of, in fact, my company that I work with, the designer is a brilliant mind. And, you know, eventually, you know, it's the person who can bring it to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is Steve Jobs' story, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Steve Jobs worked with brilliant minds.
That's right.
And he was able to bring it to the public through vision.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sympathetic to Ray Kroc.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ray Kroc really squeezed out these people. You recognize that at the end. And he did not come through with some verbal agreements. They did, but they were verbal, right? And that's really one of the challenges.
Yeah.
Now, we are in the Chicago area, so I'm going to give you a couple things. One, I go to Display Inns all the time. I've got clients out there. And McDonald's number one is there. Now, you've got like a 70s version of McDonald's, that style of McDonald's, not the modern one that mm-hmm. they use now, but the one in between. And across the street from it is the Golden Arches one that was featured in this film. And the joke was that is McDonald's one. It really is. It says inside,
right,
McDonald's one.
Yeah.
So the brothers got squeezed out again.
Right.
The other thing is McDonald's used to have, they still have maybe some corporate offices, but in Oak Brook, Illinois, which is outside Chicago, there's Hamburger University,
mm-hmm.
and there is a hotel. And there is office buildings. Now, they have moved, I think their corporate office is downtown Chicago now. But, and McDonald, that facility, those acres, are for sale now.
Hmm.
But I've been to meetings at McDonald's University, and the building is of its time, but it really is a beautiful facility. There's no doubt, man. There are scientists working to make McDonald's food better. Because of so much bad publicity they've gotten over the last, say, 10, 15 years, they've worked real hard to try to bring back their fresh, wholesome
image.
Yeah. I mean, as in, like, this is real hamburger.
Right. Stop putting out stories that are trying to tell us that we're doing something wrong or bad.
And they really are. When I say scientists, that's what they are. They're chefs and scientists. They're making the burger like you would make the burger at mm-hmm. home, but they're making their type. I just remember watching a bunch of these videos and going, yeah, they really are trying to combat some of the image issues that they're mm-hmm. running through. McDonald's owners ebb and flow as far as doing really well and not doing well. My experience with them in the past, when I've worked with them, is that they are so lucky to have this. And you grew up in the Chicago area.
Yep.
So I just want to ask you about this. You always had McDonald's around you.
McDonald's has always been a thing in my lifestyle. There's always been McDonald's. It's always been kind of a go-to for food. You know, even in the times where you know that McDonald's might not be the healthiest choice, it's the easiest choice.
Well, you know, they worked real hard in the 70s. Now, in North Carolina, I don't think every place had a McDonald's.
Really?
No, I think they were still...
It's hard for me to imagine.
I think they were still expanding at that time.
Wow.
And the thing that McDonald's did in the 70s is they spent a lot of time advertising that they were really, really clean. Mm-hmm. You remember? And they would wipe down the bathrooms and wipe down the counters. And I mean, it was all advertising about how clean they were. And they were, you know, using terms like treat yourself. So for this generation of people, I don't think my young people are really eating a lot of McDonald's. Mm-hmm. I think it's all us.
Yeah, I think it's all Generation X, yeah.
But it's all based on convenience, mm-hmm. cheap meal.
Speed. That,
and stuff like that.
That concept of fast food that the brothers brought out, and Ray Kroc saw the potential and brought that potential to the rest of the world.
Now, he obviously screwed out these brothers down in San Bernardino. His wife was incredibly generous. She gave a lot of money to NPR, gave a lot to a lot of charities. Ray Kroc at one point owned the San Diego Padres. That's the reason why their uniforms were brown. Interestingly enough.
That is interesting.
Because they were the I'm going to use quotes, McDonald's uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
And he moved from the Chicago area. It took place in Arlington Heights, where he lived at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he ended up living in Beverly Hills and California and stuff like that. Anyway, I recommend this movie. Yeah. I would say 75.
Yeah.
70, 75. Yeah, this is, I don't know, scale from 1 to 100.
I think this was definitely a 75 or 80% film.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is really good. Michael Keaton is a great actor. I'm so glad to see Michael Keaton back in so many great roles.
He's really is one of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
My daughter, who watched this with me, she's 15, she immediately wanted to watch Saving Mr. Banks. And she's seen Saving Mr. Banks probably 7 or 8 times.
Wow.
Now. And I think part of it is it's got the same director.
Okay.
It just has a feeling of, you know, Saving Mr. Banks was about Disney,
mm-hmm.
about his experience in working with the writer of Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
This is very similar in the sense of you're getting a story on the founding of McDonald's, this icon, McDonald's.
Very cool. Pick this one up. It is a good movie. Opening this week, we've got there's a collection of movies that are coming out this week.
Some of them are interesting.
Maybe
some of them
not
are
the ones that you would see or really make plans to see. But I am making plans to see The Tick, which is coming back as another version of The Tick. Remember, there was the animated version, then there was the live action version, and now there's another live action version. This is coming to Amazon Prime on August 25th.
Now, The Tick is based off a comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of a playful look at superheroes.
The idea of superheroes, it's a little bit of parody, it's a little bit of satire, and the dumb jock idea and the superhero idea and the nerd, there's stereotypes mixed in there, there's a little bit of racism mixed in there. I enjoy The Tick.
If you've got young people, they'll probably enjoy the absurdity.
I don't know. They'll look at the colorful things and maybe apply their knowledge of superheroes and look at it from a different perspective. That's what The Tick does for me. Spoon!
Okay.
You don't know The Tick?
I do not. I never watched The Tick.
Oh my goodness. All right, let me give you the Spoon story really quickly. The Tick and Arthur are the duo in this story.
Both dressed in superhero costumes.
Both dressed as superheroes, very strange superheroes, The Tick being a very strange superhero. He says to Arthur, "We need a slogan. We need a thing that we shout when we go into action." And Arthur says, "How about fork?" Because that's the only thing he could see in his view. And The Tick says, "No, we can't shout fork. That's too tiny. Look at all those tines on that thing."
All right, for all you people who want to see that, that's on Amazon.
I use that joke all the time. It's too tiny.
All right, but we do have some fun stuff coming up. Bring it on, Steve.
Bring it. Bring it. Birth of the Dragon. This is a dramatic, sort of real, based on a true story of the 1960s San Francisco and Bruce Lee Kung Fu master.
Vince McMahon.
Yes, this is a WWE picture.
All you little Hulksters out there who want to know a little bit about Kung Fu.
And know a little bit about Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee's story is a very interesting story, and this looks like a very interesting presentation of that story.
And all the things that you would think about for a martial arts movie, It seems to have part of it. A lot of fun. Oh, this looks like it's going to be an action fun movie.
Yeah, I like those kinds of movies, so I look forward to Birth of the Dragon. There's one called All Saints. This is that really deep idea of spirituality made into a movie, giving us a message. This is a message movie.
Yeah, this is, seems to be from the studio down in the Georgia area that brought us War Room. They ended up bringing us Facing the Giants, things of that nature. These have all been very good movies. They've been movies that kind of show individuals how they can be better Christians is basically what it would be about. This is this is a fun movie. It's the guy who talks about Walgreens.
It's John Corbett, yeah. John Corbett is playing a character just like every other character that John Corbett has ever played.
A failing church, God comes to him and says, build a farm.
Yeah. And these are beautiful stories.
These really are the best of the genre.
Yeah, I really do like those. There is one called Leap. This is an animated adventure. It's that other tier of animation. It's not Disney animation. It's not DreamWorks. It's those other guys. This might be really good. It's a story of a little girl growing up in Paris.
Steve, there's ballerinas in it. If you've got a little girl, you probably could watch this.
Yeah, this is...
They'd probably be happy.
This is a children's movie. This is designed for children, not necessarily for families. Then
we get the odd movie.
Here we go.
You got to look for this one because this one is probably as odd as they come.
You should definitely go to our show notes and look at the trailer for Unleashed. This is a very, very silly story of a young lady played by Kate Mussini, who you might know from Garfunkel and Oates.
Very funny.
Very funny. Very talented actress. And she makes a wish that her cat and her dog could become the men she's been looking for in her life, and that's what happens.
So this is all improv playing. I mean, these people, I mean, there's a lot of unique situations. A guy playing silly. A dog, a guy playing a cat,
and he really looks like a cat. If you look at this trailer, look at that guy's face, he looks like a cat.
The way the cat and dog interact with each other.
Yes.
You know, cats want to be worshipped, and they expect it.
And dogs think that they're amazing, and cats disagree with them. This is very silly. You're going to have a hard time finding this one in the theaters, but it'll be streaming pretty quick.
You'll want to seek this out, especially if you're looking for something unique and something very playful.
Yeah, it is that playful, unique time of the year where those movies are not necessarily going to be spectaculars. Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week, and you got a chance to read a book called Waiter to the Rich and Shameless, Confessions of a 5-Star Beverly Hills Server. This one's by Paul Hartford. Tell us all about that one.
Now, this is a fantastic... By the way, it's on Amazon right now for, I think it's $3.99 as of this recording. I actually listened to this as I was driving down to North Carolina for a vacation.
Okay.
And this was... I listened to it the whole way. It was it's just a fantastic, fun story. It is... it takes place in the Cricket Room, Steve. The Cricket Room is a name that they had to change it to so that they could write this book, because it really took place in the Polo Lounge in Beverly Hills, which is kind of a special place if you lived. If you're in if you're in Beverly Hills.
Oh, I'm going to have to change my accent for the rest of this discussion. The Polo Room in Beverly Hills. All right,
he's gone. Thurston Howell the Third.
I love it.
So Warren Beatty is one of the people that we start out. So our gentleman, who is our writer, Paul, Mm-hmm. He was a rock and roll musician, and he was close. I mean, there's a lot of bands that get really close to kind of breaking through. He had the right look. He had the right songs were coming together, and maybe they had some moderate success. But he woke up one day and taste had changed. All of a sudden, Nirvana comes out. Mm. And if you're the Poison Rat hair band. Then all of a sudden you've got a whole new scene that you're just not part of. He had to make a decision, and he decided that he needed a break from the rock and roll musician's lifestyle. Hmm. And he decided what he was going to do is become a waiter. So he became a waiter at a very prestigious place.
Yes.
To get in, you needed to, he became a bartender. That's where he started. And we learned all sorts of interesting things. One, Johnny Depp, he loved serving Johnny Depp. And his wife would come in with his family, and they would serve meals. Johnny Depp likes wine. And most of us don't buy $3,000, $6,000, $10,000 bottles of wine.
No, not very often.
Okay, but this seems very normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not abnormal. Often enough that it shouldn't shock you.
Mm-hmm.
And so Johnny Depp knows his wine, and that's one of the things you learn from this. Rod Stewart comes in. You know, there's a lot of name dropping through this, and a lot of how the business is run. When I was young, I bartended. I waited tables. I was a busboy when I was 13 at a really nice restaurant.
Hmm.
And what I loved about being a busboy, being 13, is when you get paid. I also wash dishes for a place. But I loved that you could say, what do you want for dinner? And they would say, well, we got some leftover prime rib. Why don't you have this dip, Chip? Well, for a 13-year-old boy who was like me, who's, you know, about 6'5", I could eat a lot of steak.
Yeah.
So they had no problem setting me up. And by the way, the restaurant I worked at when I first got into the restaurant business is still around today. So when I go back to Fayetteville, I have to go to it. My point being is that you get a lot of stories about the waiter dealing with the back office, about their restaurant being sold to a corporation, and the corporation not realizing what makes this location special. What makes the service special? They had a whole script they had to go through. And, you know, you think that, you know, a restaurant that's as prestigious as this would not have the same challenges of a Chili's.
Mm-hmm.
But they really do. They really do.
Different scale, maybe.
Yeah, it's just a different scale.
Yeah.
And the expectations are there, and the things that they're presenting. He talked about working. He has a scooter. He goes back and forth to work. He talks about his wedding, about his knowledge of food and wine, stuff like that. I can't remember if it was in France or in Italy. It doesn't really matter. The point being is that it was really kind of a special occasion. And he felt that his knowledge of working in this type of environment really helped him enjoy his life. We get I think his honeymoon we get to listen to, where he goes all over. And how he sort of drinks in the area. His disillusionment ultimately with waiting tables, which a lot of people have. It's a young person's game. I mean, there are older people who do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's physically demanding. It's mentally demanding. And you're basically starting from zero every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I just drank this up. This was such a sort of informative, breezy, fun read. Along with a growth of an individual, a man went from one point of his life to another part, that this was really just the type of book that was perfect for a vacation.
Excellent.
So I highly recommend this.
All right. That one is called Waiter to the Rich and Shameless, Confessions of a 5-Star Beverly Hills Server. It's on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. There's some things happening in the world, and we're going to talk about some of them. There are bad fish out there. Watch out It's the carp, bad fish.
It's the carp
the
they're
Asian
invading.
Asian carp, not just the regular carp. These are the Asian carp.
Well, what ends up happening is boats end up going all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what happens when you get to a port? Well, things get attached to these...
the ballast inside the boat, that little bit of water that they get sucked in, and sometimes they suck in a fish or two.
And anyway, they'll take things all over the world. Yep. That's where plagues came from, and they went from one place to another. Anyway, they ended up bringing these fish. They're an invasive species.
And we have a problem.
We do. But anyway, they were looking for a solution, Steve, always... I think it's $700,000 in cash prizes. The Army Corps of Engineers is basically offering, if you can figure out a way to save the Great Lakes, right?
Save the Great Lakes from the Asian carp. So somebody came up with a great idea, and that is play bad music.
This was based on another theory, because there was a gentleman who had a CD of 80s hair band music.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
so good music.
Okay. Okay. And it was playing, and guess what ended up happening in his area? Well, the deer ran away. They did not like listening to, I'm sorry. It wasn't hairband music. It was Tainted Love, Every Rose Has Its Thorn, and I Just Called to Say I Love You.
There you go.
These songs right there were part of the repeat, and the deer ran away. So they said, well, will these songs work the same way with the Asian carp? Steve, they didn't.
They didn't.
They seemed to like them.
The Asian carp came to those concerts, and they were very happy to sit in lawn seats.
But what they didn't like, Steve, was the soft rock from the 70s, baby.
Right.
Debbie Boone's You Light Up My Life. They did not like that song. They didn't like the Captain Tennille's Love Will Keep Us Together.
Wow.
Tony Orlando and Don's Tie a Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree. And Billy Ocean... They didn't like this music, Steve. Billy Ocean was in the 80s. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter. This soft rock
that
happened during that time. The Asian carp do not like it, and they tend to run away.
There's something about the vibration, something about the rhythm, something about the repetition that the Asian carp don't like these songs, and they will go away from these songs.
I'm speaking to the gentleman of the area. If there's ever a time that you want to, you know... Play with your wife a little bit. One of the things I enjoy doing is playing a few of these songs. You know, Glenn Campbell passed away a few weeks ago, and I play a few Glenn Campbell songs, a few Willie Nelson songs. My wife at some point will just turn to me like, what is going on?
And drive away like the Asian carp.
Anyway, it's fun to do. All right, anything else coming up,
Steve? Speaking of fun to do, that's a great transition, Chip. Fun to do this weekend, Wizard World is coming to Chicago. This is kind of like Chicago's Comic-Con. It
takes place in Rosemont.
This is in Rosemont. I have gone to Wizard World one time. I don't go there very often. It is a huge extravaganza.
It is.
So much space.
All right. So what is this? Is at one time these were comic book conventions, mm-hmm. and then it became more like pop culture conventions.
Right.
We can meet people who start in television shows and movies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You can go to panels where they talk about comics and movies and any other type of pop stuff. Steve. I've gone, I think, twice.
Okay.
And my kids were really, really young because we were just looking for things to do.
Right.
And the other thing is when I first moved up here, I just said, hey, I've never been to a big city convention. Let's go to this one. It was nice. I had a good time. But this one has a lot of Doctor Who people coming,
there
Steve.
There are a lot of Doctor Who guests coming this year. Let's see if I can...
David Tennant's one of them.
David Tennant, Alex Kingston, John Barrowman, Catherine Tate, and Jenna Coleman will all be in Chicago for Wizard World this year.
Steve,
that's a long list.
Do you know these people?
Oh, well, I know their characters very well. Let's put it that way. I enjoy their work as actors, as these characters. I've never been in the room with any of these names, so I might have to go over to Wizard World this weekend.
Well, it would be a place to go. There's always a lot going on.
Yeah.
And it's something to do here in the Chicago area.
Yeah, Gene Simmons is going to be there. He wasn't on Doctor Who, but he certainly could be if you wanted to sell any Kiss material.
I bet Lou Ferrigno is going to be there, Steve.
Lou Ferrigno is going to be there. Michael Rooker. There's so many great names. The kids from Stranger Things are going to be there. They've been going around to a lot of the conventions.
Sure, and Stranger Things 2 is coming up.
Yeah.
Now, if you missed this one, There's one coming up a month later up in Madison, which is about 90 miles from us. So the point is that we can hit them all if you want.
That'd be awesome.
All right. So, Steve, there's something really big happening right this week.
Yeah, this weekend marks the 100th year that Jack Kirby has been a part of the Earth lifestyle. He's no longer with us, unfortunately. So this is the anniversary of his birth. He would have been 100 years old on August 28th.
Now, if you remember a while ago when we started our podcast, we actually reviewed King Kirby as a book, and it was a book about celebrating his life, and it was a gentleman who wrote it who Kirby eventually moved to Southern California. Anyway, these were kids. They found out where Kirby lived. They showed up at his house, knocked on his door. His wife let them in, made them sandwiches, and they would sit around as Kirby drew.
Wow.
These comics. So Kirby is a very special artist and maybe underappreciated on some level. He considered his work pop art, and it really was. Mm-hmm. Roy Lichtenstein, which is a person who had a painting sell for a lot of money recently, lifted a lot of stuff from comic book art, and Kirby was one of the artists he lifted from. You know, you think of Andy Warhol in the same boat. Now, Kirby worked in a a trash commodity type of industry. Comics were for children, they were for the illiterates and things of that nature, but they changed and he created the new era of comics. So it started back with Marvel in 1961 with the Fantastic Four, where Stan Lee was getting ready to bail on the industry, and Kirby said, let's just see if we can put something together and see if it will hit. And he ended up creating the Fantastic Four. This led to the Hulk and Thor and X-Men, anything you name, he had a hand in, with the exception being Spider-Man, that they ended up using another artist to create the costume for Spider-Man. Although he did draw the cover of Amazing Fantasy number 15, which was Spider-Man's first appearance.
Hmm.
All right, so Kirby basically invented the Marvel Universe. They've mined his stuff forever. If you've watched the Guardians of the Galaxy, the first Guardians of the Galaxy, they go to a Celestial's, basically his head, which is this giant, and they're mining it. And the Guardians of the Galaxy have an event there. So that is a Kirby invention. When you see the advertising for Thor Ragnarok, the 70s look, this psychedelic feel to it, this black light type feel to it. They're using in the backdrop all this Kirby-esque design, because Kirby has a way of designing machines that is absolutely known, and there's something of its time, so it's dated, but something also futuristic and fun. Kirby introduced Black Panther, which was, he said, oh, there's no black superheroes. Why don't I go ahead and introduce one?
Nice.
And because of Marvel only being allowed to have so many books, because they were actually released through DC at the time, which is their competitor, they introduced it through the Fantastic Four. So he became, part of that revolution. Eventually, in the 70s, he wrote Captain America, and his sidekick at the time was the Falcon, which is, if you watch the Avengers, the Falcon's another black superhero. The Inhumans is coming out as a television series. He invented the Inhumans. It just keeps going on and on and on. Marvel certainly doesn't seem to be doing much of a celebration of his work, and that really seems to be unfortunate, because Disney's usually a better brand manager and really knows how to sell this stuff. Although he was just, along with Stan Lee, just put as a Disney legend. But it's certainly, I could see the Art Institute downtown Chicago taking some of his just double page spreads, blowing them up, coloring them, and then, putting them in the modern art section for, this period to show how much it was, from Jackson Pollock and stuff like that. They were all taking in sort of that period of time. Eventually, Jack Kirby left Marvel, where he created all this stuff, and jumped over to DC, which is the company that has Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and ended up creating...
And Aquaman.
And Aquaman, of course. And ended up creating what was ultimately the Fourth World. And the Fourth World is where Kirby had a real interest in mythology. And what I mean by mythology, you know, from North mythology, so you get Thor and Odin and all this other stuff. Greek mythology, Hercules, and Hercules would be the Roman version. He has a affinity for the Germanic mythology. And what ultimately, and Christian, Judeo-Christian, he was a Jewish person, but from the Jewish tradition and the Christian tradition, he pulled from all of those. And the Fourth World at DC was where he took his knowledge of that and then created his own mythology. And the way that kind of worked was, in fact, you're going to see it in Justice League. That'll be coming up. They haven't officially announced it, but it looks like this is what's coming. So there's two worlds. I'm going to give you the mythology. There's two worlds. There's a world that's like a heavenly world, and there's a world that's hell. Okay, the world that's hell is Apocalypse. All right, in Apocalypse, the person who runs or who is the leader of Apocalypse is Darkseid. The person who runs the heavenly place is the High Father. And so Kirby's work described this, these two worlds warring with each other. And ultimately, they decided to find a truce or find a way for a truce. And the way they did it is they took their firstborn sons and they trade them. Mm-hmm. So Darkseid's son, which was Orion, was given to Highfather to raise. And Highfather's son, which was Scott Free, or the Miracle Man, he was given to Darkseid to raise. Well, so Scott Free, the Miracle Man, he was not cared for. Darkseid didn't really care about his children. But you can imagine growing up in hell and how that would impact you. So eventually, Miracle Man escapes to Earth, and that's where he kind of becomes a magician and escape artist and stuff like that. Now, Orion, you know, he's Darkseid's son, so nature versus nurture. You know, he's got all the feelings of a raging person, but he's being raised on this calming, nurturing environment. And so we get to see him. And ultimately, these worlds are at war with each other for all time, for eternity. And that's what the mythology he ended up taking. It was cut short. He wanted it to be its own separate story. It ended up being incorporated. But anyway, DC has mined his work forever. Now, I'm going to show you another part to it, because Kirby ended up working for three or four companies, actually a lot of companies. And he ended up, could you create a scenario where they all work together? And the answer is, of course you can. Because Kirby is the Kirbyverse. And I'm using that word in a loose to anything he created. So this work at Marvel ultimately would end with Thor. So in North mythology, what's the end of the all time coming? The war, the end all wars. It is Ragnarok, right?
Okay.
That's the war, the end all wars. That's a mythology. So the gods die and they're reborn. So how are they reborn? They're reborn as the new gods.
There you go.
So anyway, Kirby was an incredibly gifted dreamer. His wife would not let him drive because his mind was so, when I say spacey, I don't mean that in a negative sense. It just was bursting with ideas. Mm-hmm. Star Wars was heavily influenced by the Fourth World. Masters of the Universe movie, this movie that was panned. Anyway, they tried to create a Kirby-like world. Kirby never felt like he was that he was truly appreciated by Marvel's because they worked under a different contract, but he was always trying to do what was best for his family. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why he ended up jumping. But he eventually worked for in cartooning. He designed the characters Thundar the Barbarian and stuff like that from the early 80s and stuff. You'll know these cartoons. Fantastic Four cartoon he was part of.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, his stuff is everywhere. He truly is one of those masters. And we're celebrating his 100th birthday.
That's pretty special. That is some history that we can look into and see where, how do we get here? How did we get to all of these superhero movies that are just the biggest movies of the year?
Well, they're mining a lot of his work. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you have to recognize that he was dirt poor. He was a Jewish immigrant, Jakob Kirschberg. He came to America. They had nothing. And when he died, he left a middle-class lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But very similar to the Ray Kroc movie that we introduced, his stuff wasn't really, when I say wasn't paid for, the way that the agreement was. The contracts weren't written the way he should have been as wealthy as Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Or wealthier.
Yeah.
We all can look. He did what he set out to do. His life from a young age, his family had a much better life. In fact, they're still having a better life. Disney and Kirby's estate is settled. So we don't know what the conditions were for that. But it's a great story of immigrants coming over and just building something that delights people today.
There you go. That is the story of America in a lot of ways. And it's the story of Jack Kirby. Happy birthday, Jack Kirby. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think so. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and every day of the week. And go to our news site, news.TooMuchScrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflove.
We'll see you in the future.